Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This, Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Martina Baker, and this is what's happening this week in our community. Local party leaders have nominated three Clackamas County men to replace former state representative and House Minority Leader Christine Drazen, a Republican from Canby, who resigned this week to pursue her bid for governor. Republican Precinct Committee Persons, PCPs, in Clackamas and Marion counties gather Tuesday night to interview and consider the six applicants for the remainder of Drazen's term. They ultimately elected to send up Canby businessman and former city councilor Paul Carson of Oregon City, Canby Planning Commission Vice Chair James Heeb of Canby, and Navy veteran Donnie Headland of Eagle Creek. Former Clackamas County Republican Chair and current Canby City Council President Tracy Hensley had also applied to be considered for the vacancy, along with Lisa Davidson of Oregon City and Laura Roses of Molino. Carlson is the founder and owner of 48 Financial, a financial planning firm in downtown Canby, which takes its name from the Bible verse Philippians 4:8, and a former longtime board member and president of the Canby Area Chamber of Commerce. He co-founded the Canby Dahlia Run in 2011 and served as its director until 2019. Heeb is the director of the Building Blocks Early Learning Center, a full-day child care center and preschool in Wilsonville, and has served as the elected precinct committee person for Voter Precinct 124, North Canby, in House District 39, and treasurer for the Young Republicans of Oregon. He is a United States Marine veteran of the Iraq War and senior vice commander for the Canby Aurora VFW Post. He is also a member of the American Legion. Clackamas and Marion County Commissioners will meet jointly on Monday, February 7th, to consider the three nominees and appoint one of them to serve until Drazen's term ends in January 2023. There is some urgency, as the 39th District, which includes Canby, Molino, Beaver Creek, and Estacada, is currently unrepresented in the 2022 legislative short session that began Tuesday. At least a half dozen Canby School District elementary students were turned away at the door Monday morning after they and their parents said they would no longer follow the state's indoor mask mandate due to a New York Supreme Court ruling that briefly overturned school mask rules in that state last week before it was temporarily stayed. Local mother April Press attempted to drop two of her children, a fourth grader and kindergartner, off at Eccles Elementary School Monday, along with two other moms and five other children, all unmasked, but were stopped at the door by Principal Andy McKean. One of the other moms, Ashley Fryman, live-streamed a public video to Facebook afterward, saying she and her three kids plan to remain outside the school until Superintendent Aaron Downs returned her phone calls and addressed her concerns. "We have to stand up for our kids and their constitutional rights," she said. "All we want is the freedom to choose what's best for our kids, and it starts with us as parents. These kids deserve to breathe. We're going to be out here freezing until we hear from somebody. Freedom." Though she did not reference the New York Supreme Court decision, Fryman also claimed the law and Constitution forbid enforcement of mask mandates. If you guys didn't know, it's illegal to force people to wear a mask in any state, Freiman said in her video. It's also illegal to force a mask that inhibits your natural ability to breathe, and our schools have no local authority to make change. They say you cannot come into the building. Oregon courts have repeatedly shot down legal challenges to the state's COVID mandates, albeit sometimes on procedural grounds, such as a September 2021 ruling from the Oregon Court of Appeals that said the case was moot because the state's mask rules had changed so many times. We understand some of our families may have questions around mask wearing in schools, Christine Wohlers, the district's communications director, said in a written statement to The Current Monday afternoon, responding to that morning's incident. At this time, there is no new guidance in Oregon that has removed the indoor mask mandate. Until these policies are updated or changed, we must operate using our current protocols and will need to ask students to wear masks indoors. We are keeping watch and implementing changes as they come. We also continue to focus on keeping our students in person 5 days a week and making the most of that teaching and learning time. In a phone interview with Now Hear This, Canby, Press cited several concerns she has with the school mask mandate. It's just getting to the point where there's no logic to it. There's no medical purpose for it, she said. It's inhibiting them. The kids don't like wearing the mask, they get wet, they get gross, and they can't see their friends' faces. It's hard to communicate, especially for the kindergartners who are just learning how to speak. Press and Freiman said they both intend to continue to protest the mask mandate outside of Eccles every morning. I could have easily pulled my kids out and not make a fuss, just do what was best for my kids, but nobody ever created change by doing something quietly, Press said. I felt this was bigger than just my family and my kids. There are so many parents who don't have the luxury of homeschooling, and I wanted to be a voice for them. And there has been such an outpouring from those moms saying, thank you, we stand with you. Kyle Lang, who stepped down as chamber director last week, will serve as the new general manager of Hairfest and the Wild Hair Music Festival, while also joining the team of Jay Fell Presents. Lang is no stranger to Hairfest, having worked with Jason Fellman, founder of Jay Fell Presents and co-owner of Hairfest, and Joan Monin, owner of the Wild Hair Saloon in Canby in Oregon City, as well as co-founder of Hairfest, many times and in various roles over the years. Honestly, this position feels more like a homecoming more than a new opportunity, Lang said. Over the last decade, I've built great relationships with the folks who make the festivals run, so it largely feels like bringing the band back together. I am excited about the new developments with the festivals and the new partnership with Clackamas County Fairgrounds and Event Center, so I'm ready to dig in and get my hands dirty. Hairfest has been on hold for nearly 2 years due to the pandemic, but Jay Fell Presents has continued to expand live music options in the area with events like the wildly successful Wild Hair Summer Concert Series, a series of 18 outdoor shows through summer and early fall 2021, which included many of the acts that have, or were scheduled to, appear at Hairfest. Lang cited the company's guiding principles of delivering exceptional experiences for fans and partners as key to his decision. They are focused on two things above everything else, the fans and the customer service. And that priority is largely what brings me back into the fold, Lang said. Not only do I love the events, but I love the way the festival owners think about how to provide these experiences for their fans. Lang's wealth of business and industry experience, as well as government and public-private partnerships, will serve not only in continuing the stage spectacular concerts, but also assisting local municipalities and maximizing the economic development potential of these engagements. It's an exciting time in our industry because through challenges comes opportunity, and essentially, that's what Jay Fell Presents provides, opportunity, he said. And the biggest opportunity right now is to help communities and businesses capitalize on economic development through tourism and the arts. Everybody wins, and I think that's something we could all use a little bit more of these days. Two separate investigations are underway after allegations that a Malala student donned blackface and other fans made racist taunts during a home basketball game against league rival Gladstone on Friday. The two probes, one led by both school districts and the Oregon School Activities Association, and a second by the Molalla Police Department, are investigating claims by Gladstone players that a white Molalla student painted his face and upper body black after arriving at the game, that other Molalla fans made monkey noises while Gladstone's black players had the ball or were shooting free throws, and that a woman displayed a picture of a Confederate flag on her phone as the visiting team entered the gymnasium. According to the Oregonian and other media outlets, several Gladstone students described the alleged racist behavior, including a sophomore who described a confrontation with a student reportedly wearing blackface. The Oregonian said in its report that it had obtained photos and video of the incident and confirmed the Molalla student, who is white, covered his entire face, neck, and arms with black paint. The paper did not share the photos or video. Molalla Superintendent Tony Mann and Gladstone Super Bob Stewart, along with OSAA Executive Director Peter Weber, issued a statement Wednesday afternoon that called the allegations deeply troubling and said a joint investigation is underway to determine what happened and what should be done to address it. This investigation's success requires that we acknowledge the need for deep conversation, in-depth fact-finding, and a thorough understanding about what occurred, the statement read. We will engage people at every level, from district administrators to coaches to students. To that end, we will be working with an independent investigator and we will take appropriate action upon the investigation's completion. The official said their districts and the OSAA will continue to communicate, listen, resolve, and move forward together and ask for patience as the investigation moves forward. Collectively, we believe that every student, coach, and community member who visits another district should have and promote a respectful, enjoyable, educational, and safe experience, whether at an athletic event or for any other purpose, the statement said. This is part of creating an environment in our schools that is welcoming and free from bullying, racial slurs, harassment, and other forms of bias. The messages we send through our words and actions convey who we are. We must never stop evaluating and improving how we treat each other in this world, and we have zero tolerance for racial discrimination and intimidation in our schools. This is a challenging moment for all of us, and it is imperative we use it as an opportunity to improve understanding, demonstrate care, and deepen our connections within and between our communities. Cougar Country, hometown sports coverage is brought to you by Reif and Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country POD. After running into the brick wall that is Jackson Shellstad and the West Lynn Lions, the Canby Cougars boys basketball team bounced back with a nice 54-41 win over the Oregon City Pioneers. Canby's week began with a home matchup against 10-2 West Lynn. Canby, which hasn't beaten their league rival since February of 2011, had an uphill battle against the 10th-ranked Lions, who were led by star Jackson Shellstad. The four-star Oregon commit leads the state in points per game, averaging a whopping 27 per contest, and is Oregon's number one recruit, as well as a top 15 point guard prospect in the country. After one half of play, Canby had put 15 points on the board. Shellstad had 15 himself. Cougar head coach Craig Evans detailed the difficulty of containing West Lynn's dynamo. Preparing for a talented player like Shellstad is not easy, Evans told The Current. There is no magical formula. We had a game plan for him and the rest of the team. He stepped up and delivered what he needed to beat us. In the next game against Oregon City, Canby focused on one thing, attacking the inside. The Cougars turned to Jacob Strand, who scored 10 points in the first half alone before his teammates decided to give him a hand. Peyton Myers' drives inside earned him 7 free throws in the game, where 6 of his 16 points on the night came from. Dom Pepper also had a career night, hitting all of his shots in the second half. The balanced attack propelled Canby to their second league victory of the year, winning 54-41. Canby will only have one game next week, an away matchup against Tigard, 10-4, 2-1 TRL, on Tuesday. The two teams faced off in December in the Les Schwab Invitational, where the Tigers won 54-44 in a game without Alex Evans. The game is scheduled to tip off at 6:30 p.m. In other sports action this week, the boys and girls swim teams returned to the pool together for two dual meets, winning both. In their first matchup of the week at Lake Oswego on Wednesday, the Cougars swim team dominated, with the girls winning 115.5 to 54.5, while the boys finished ahead, 106 to 59. Lake Oswego was not at full strength for a variety of reasons, said Cougar swim coach Eric Latenen, but Canby swam well and was happy with the win. After a strong victory, the Cougar swimmers didn't have to wait long to follow up their win. Canby returned to their home pool the next day after the Lake Oswego meet to face the Oregon City Pioneers. Once again, Canby continued to roll on all fronts as the girls won 107 to 63, while the boys won 108 to 51.
So, Tyler, Valentine's Day is coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Got any big plans with the missus?
Oh, you know it.
That's what I thought. A little candlelight, nice dinner.
Mm-hmm. Check and check.
Romantic music, champagne, and of course, books.
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah, man. Ladies love books, and books are a great gift that show you value and appreciate everything about that special someone in your life, including their mind.
Okay, I'm with you. One problem, though. What if I don't know what book she would like?
Not to worry, my friend. The Book Nook on North Grant Street in downtown Canby has you covered with their Blind Date with a Book promotion. You just pick out the genre and they take care of the rest, sending you home with your choice of a new or used pre-wrapped hardcover or paperback gem that she or he or they are sure to love.
That does sound pretty cool and romantic.
Yep. Plus, the Book Nook has a fantastic selection of chocolate, candy, cards, and other gifts for all of your Valentine's needs.
And that's not all. If you're in need of a special outing on Valentine's week, look no further than Trivia Night at Wayward Sandwiches Thursday, February 17th. They're partnering with the Book Nook for an evening of romantic literature-themed trivia, awesome bookish prizes, and lots of fun.
For all things books and more, check out The Book Nook, 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue, or visit them on Facebook, Instagram, and at booknookcanby.com. It's back. Hosted by the Canby Rotary Club, Canby's inaugural Daddy-Daughter Dance was one of the first local events to be postponed due to the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic in March 2020. Now, 2 years later, the need for parents, kids, families, and the community to come together, reconnect, and have a little fun is greater than ever. Here's Canby Rotary President and event organizer Ray Keene.
So the Daddy-Daughter Dance is really just coming online at, I think, a really important time for the relationships that are really core in our community. When you think about opportunities to come together with a father and a daughter to connect, or other meaningful relationships, we're really open to all coming. So, you know, when those relationships are kind of when they've been hammered the way that the last couple of years have, you know, really impacted all of our relationships, I think it's really an important time for dads and daughters to be able to get together and do something that's really special.
So join us for an evening of fun, food, magic, music, and of course, dancing from 6 to 9 p.m. Saturday, March 12th at the Ackerman Center in Canby. The night will include a chocolate fountain, refreshments, arts and crafts, a photo booth, a live magic show, and other surprises that are sure to amaze and delight the little princess in your life. Tickets are $30 per couple and $10 for every additional child, with all proceeds supporting the work of Canby Rotary and its charitable efforts in our community. All are welcome at this fun, friendly, and inclusive event. For tickets or more information, visit canbyrotary.com. On the Canby Conversation today, we are delighted to be able to welcome back a previous guest. She's a member of the United States Alpine Ski Team, Aurora native, and Canby High School grad, Jackie Wiles. When we last spoke with Jackie, she was in the early days of rehabbing from a devastating injury that occurred just before the 2018 Olympics. She joins us now from Olympic Village in Beijing as she prepares for the third Olympics she has qualified for and the second one in which she's actually able to compete. Hi, Jackie. Welcome back onto the show.
Hi, Tyler. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We're so happy to be able to talk to you. First, I just want to hear, how are the accommodations out there? Are you liking the cardboard beds? I know those can be kind of controversial. Are they actually cardboard this time?
I actually wish I could report. I'm actually still in Europe at the moment.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I just finished up our last race weekend in Garmisch, Germany. So heading there soon, but I haven't made the trek. But I hear it's not as bad as everyone made it out to seem.
Okay, great. Well, that's good to hear. Wow. So yeah. So again, competition runs right up to the Olympics because they start in just a few days.
Yeah, it's coming quickly. But for the speed events, this Olympics, the speed will be at the end. So
okay.
A lot of us will come in a little bit later, get some training in, get adjusted, and then get ready to compete during the second week.
Awesome. Well, we're obviously looking forward to the Olympics. Want to hear about that. Got a few questions to ask you. But first, just want to look back a little bit, you know, kind of briefly. When we last spoke, again, you know, you were starting that rehab process, or you were in the early few months of that. Would you be able to give us just a brief overview of the past few years, what it's kind of looked like, how you got from this devastating injury that you suffered during a competition, getting back to the elite level that you were at before and that you're at now?
Yeah, it's kind of wild, actually, where I literally just competed this last weekend. It's a complete repeat of 4 years ago where the same track took me out right before the Olympics. So for me, it was kind of a redemption, get the race weekend out of the way before the Olympics. And I was happy with my skiing. So that's kind of a check and a weight off my back. But yeah, 4 years ago here in Garmisch, I had just come off a podium with my teammate, Lindsey Vonn, and was feeling super poised to carry momentum into the Olympics on a track that suited me well in South Korea. And then going into Garmisch, just took a really bad fall and broke my leg, pretty much tore every ligament, had meniscus damage, nerve damage, and it took 18 months of rehab to get back on snow. And luckily, I didn't realize what I had in store and how long it would take. You know, that was just the physical side, but then became a massive hurdle mentally of being back on snow and not just skiing, but learning how to race again and finding the inner drive to want to go fast and huck myself down a mountain at 80 miles an hour. So it's been a long couple years for sure. I've had a couple more knee cleanup injuries and surgeries since. So, you know, I'm finally starting to feel like myself again. It's been a massive road, but, you know, all of the work and everything that's gone into the last 4 years make it so worth it to be able to have redemption and go to this Olympics now.
Absolutely. Jackie, that's incredible to go down that same course and in that same area where you suffered that injury 4 years ago. What were you thinking and feeling just emotionally and mentally, and how did you handle that before you, kind of took that first plunge for downhill skiing events?
Yeah, good question. The first time that I actually went back to the venue, I didn't realize how much it would affect me. I instantly teared up when I got there to the crash site and realized that the emotions and the history of everything that happened there were so embedded deeply. And, you know, it's been a working progress of learning to deal with fear now. And luckily, the US ski team and the Olympic team have a lot of great resources for mental health. And I've worked with a sports psychologist who's really helped me with identifying fear, knowing that it's an okay thing to feel and kind of being at peace with it and accepting it and not letting it take over and control your performance. So I've learned a lot over the last 4 years. I've been in Garmisch now a couple times and I'm trying to embed good memories there now. So it's all good.
Yeah, absolutely. Last question about the past. Just want to hear, because, when we last spoke, this was in the future at that point. But COVID, how did that kind of affect you? You were kind of back to skiing, I think, at that point, downhill and getting back up to the elite level. How did it affect you and your team? And was it just like, are you kidding me? Like, I did all this like rehab and now this crazy thing's affecting the world.
Yeah, it's been pretty wild. If anything, it's just made us have to have a tighter bubble while we're over here racing and competing, and the race season, just being careful so we don't test positive to miss races. So, for us Americans, we're always in Europe on the road, living out of hotels. So we're kind of used to that isolation feeling. And I think it actually gave us kind of a little bit of a bonus factor of knowing what to expect and how to anticipate kind of being isolated, whereas the Europeans on the road, that they're not as used to it and being able to go home every weekend. So it's been kind of weird and tough. I'm tired of wearing masks, but so is everyone else, and just hoping we can get past this soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Hear you on that. So one question I wanted to ask you is probably a banal question. You've answered 1,000 times, but it's just like one of those ones. You just have to be patient with us because you're part of this elite group that's experienced it, and we haven't. But what's it like to compete in the Olympics?
Yeah, it's really a feeling that I've never experienced before, until that moment of going into opening ceremonies with your fellow athletes. The feeling of patriotism and the whole world coming together is like nothing else. Feeling like you're a part of something bigger than just yourself and whatever's going on in the world, just everyone is coming together, and it's just a cool moment of a lifetime of hard work, and everyone's there for the same goal, and it's just motivated to have a good time and do their best. So the patriotism is something that I am absolutely obsessed with, and I think it's so cool.
Yeah. And there must just be so much deeper personal levels of meaning to you because of your journey and what you've experienced between, your second Olympics, which you weren't actually able to participate in, unfortunately, to this one.
Yeah. I mean, that one was devastating just because I felt like, I was in my prime, peaking at the right moment. I think I can still get back there, but it's just been a mental and physical battle getting to where I know I can be. It really just makes you appreciate the life that us athletes get to live, and the fact that I'm just traveling the world ski racing with my friends and I get to represent my country. I appreciate the little things like that a lot more now, and have just perspective that, things can be taken away in an instant. So got to be grateful for those small moments and appreciative of what I get to do.
Yeah. I get the sense, tell me if I'm wrong, but it feels like you're really trying to stay focused on just the job and your performance as an athlete, trying not to get too kind of caught up in the moment, because I'm sure it could be very overwhelming if you didn't try to tamp that down a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to take it as another race. I think in terms of being able to compete well and not have distractions and not let the pressure really get to you. Just knowing that, obviously it's a big race, but at the same time, I've grown up doing this my whole life. I know what to expect in that sense. So treating it like any other race, not letting it get too wild in my mind and overanalyze and let that pressure hit. So we have a job to do, and we've been doing it all year. So I'm just going to kind of keep that going.
Absolutely. Would you be able to give us a little bit of a kind of insider's perspective and preview of what the fans and the observers might see from your team, might see from the level of competition this year for your events?
Yeah. For my events, it'll be Super Jean downhill in alpine skiing. This is a new venue that none of us have actually been to. So it's kind of cool in the sense that no one has any idea what style of skier it's going to suit. And the only thing we really know is that the snow is dry and grippy, which is similar to Colorado snow. I absolutely love that type of snow. So I know I'll be confident on it and enjoy that quite a bit. But I've heard that the track has a little bit of everything, a lot of elements. It's a well-rounded track. It's fast. It has steeps, flats, three big jumps, which will be really exciting. So I think they have built in a lot of terrain. So I think every country is going to have a fair shot. And no one will kind of have a heads up of what to expect because no one's been on it yet or seen it.
Absolutely. Well, I get and totally understand wanting to kind of focus on the job you have to do, but I do have one last navel gazing question for you. And maybe you probably haven't had a chance to really reflect, but I ask you to do it now, but just kind of thinking back to your first Olympics, right? 2014, Jackie Wiles, and kind of what do you think are kind of some of the biggest changes or the biggest things that you've learned or that are kind of part of your toolkit heading into this one?
100% my experience and a maturity as an athlete. When I was 21 at my first Olympics, it was my first year on the U.S. ski team. I had just scored World Cup points a week before the Olympics, so I wasn't even expected to go until the last minute. So I was just deer in the headlights, eyes wide open, just trying to absorb everything, take it all in, learn as much as I could for the future. And I had never gone before, like bib 50, I think, at a World Cup. And then all of a sudden at the Olympics, I was starting number two in the downhill. So it was very terrifying in that moment, but such an incredible opportunity that I tried to learn as much as I could from. And now I think I just, I've been around the circuit. I know what to expect. I know big events and how to approach them. And I've had success on World Cup. I've been through injuries, so I think I also have a different mature approach of my body and understanding. So I'm excited to come in with more years under my belt now.
We obviously are rooting for you. So excited and thrilled to be able to watch you representing our country, and you and your team. Just wish you all the best in the upcoming Olympics. I do want to just give you one last question, one last chance. So we are, the Canby Current. Now hear this Canby podcast. We're super, super local. Is there anything that you would like to share or say to kind of our listeners, folks out here that are your fans as an Olympian, but maybe who are just your fans because they remember, local Jackie Canby High kind of just support you because you came from this area?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've gotten to travel the world, but I'm so proud to be from Oregon and having, gone to high school in Canby, I have had a lot of time there and feel super supported by the community. And I'm extremely grateful and proud to represent. And I'm going to do my best to represent the best that I can. And I'm just super grateful and appreciative of all the support.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again, Jackie. And again, best of luck.
Thanks, Tyler. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Frankie, what are you doing?
I'm trying to figure out how to switch to a different TV provider now that DirectLink is ending its video services as of January 2022. It is so confusing. Did you know there are about 48 million streaming services now? Which devices do they work on? What channels do they offer?
No, I did not know that. But you do realize that if you have their easy video service now, you're already using a streaming service, right? But listen, you don't have to go this alone. DirectLink is actually helping members transition to their next video provider, offering an extensive informational website and live tutorials on alternative solutions, and even providing direct assistance to members who need it.
Wait, they're actively helping their members switch to a competing service? Who does that?
Well, DirectLink does, I guess. It's just one more chapter in their long history of caring service in Canby and wanting the best for our community. They've actually offered free community classes to teach their members about the latest technology and internet security practices for the past 12 years. That's not even to mention the popular bingo game they organized to help keep homebound members entertained and connected over the winter and fall, and extending free and reduced internet connections for Canby school kids learning from home during the pandemic, or their partnership with the city of Canby to implement free Wi-Fi at three local parks.
Whoa, DirectLink does all that?
Well, they do indeed, and that's on top of providing the best and most reliable internet service in town with the intent to cover everywhere with fiber optic technology in the next few years. In fact, you can learn more about DirectLink services or how they can help you transition to the right video service provider for your home. You can go to directlink.co-op today.
Are you a healthcare hero? Do you want to become one? Are you looking for a position where you are valued, your time is your own, and you have ample opportunity for growth? Marquee companies at Hope Village in Canby, Oregon offers all of that and more. They are currently hiring nurses, caregivers, CNAs, and enrolling students in their free CNA course. From competitive wages and up to $25,000 tuition reimbursement to flexible schedules and the opportunity to make a positive impact on someone's life, Marquee at Hope Village is the right place for you. Take your career to the next level and apply now to become a valued team member at Marquee at Hope Village in Canby. To learn more or apply today, text CURRENT, that's C-U-R-R-E-N-T, to 888-906-3432.
Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily. Find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby, or connect with them on Facebook or through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. Pioneers, happy couples, and laughing families walked quickly into the basement of Canby Christian Church on that unseasonably warm October night in 1998. And there they stayed, reading, playing cards, talking and fingering handheld video games, waiting for the call to set, and maybe, just maybe, their big Hollywood break. The 200 extras were there to fill in background scenes for the Hallmark Hall of Fame TV movie Night Ride Home, starring Keith Carradine, Rebecca De Mornay, Ellen Burstyn, and Thora Birch of Hocus Pocus and American Beauty fame. The film, which tells the story of a family grappling with the tragic loss of their son, was one of many major movie, television, and commercial productions that have been staged in the Canby area over the years. In this edition of Canby Then, we will look at just a few of them. Night Ride Home, which also prominently featured Waite Park and its iconic gazebo for a Founders Day picnic, transformed Canby into a fictional town called Elks Springs. The production was led by Wilsonville-based McGee Street Productions Incorporated and aired on CBS and other stations starting in February 1999. A Portland-based agency called Extras Only supplied the talent for the shoot, starting with a list of more than 2,000 names and slowly whittling it down to the best suited. Those who made the cut included 75-year-old Aloha resident Richard Eden Sr., an experienced extra who had gotten into the business just a few years before when he heard movie companies were looking for older men. "I'm retired and it's something to do," Eden told the Oregonian. "I usually sit around and work crossword puzzles and I can't stand sitting around. You try to get in on the action whenever you can. You never know how much will end up on the cutting room floor." Eden earned a grand total of $50 for every 8 hours he worked on the set, according to the paper. The film's producers staged a full-on carnival at Waite Park to set the scene, including vendors selling kettle corn, cotton candy, fresh fruit, and espresso. The extras, many of whom were dressed as pioneers to set the stage for the Founders Day Parade, spent 2 days roaming around on cue, dancing in the shade of the gazebo, looking as though they were having a great time. Portland resident Carol Hansen, 63, was another veteran of the extra circuit who had rubbed shoulders with a number of stars, from Kevin Dobson to Sylvester Stallone. She told the Oregonian she likes to watch the movies she works in to see whether she made the final film. Hansen and her husband Al once worked on a 10-minute scene for 2 weeks, but it was cut. "It's long hours, but it's fun hours," Hansen said. "Sometimes you're in, sometimes you're out. After all, it's supposed to be background." Julie Lord, a 36-year-old real estate agent and part-time waitress from Malala, said the movie's stars were approachable, with Carradine, De Mornay, Birch, and Jordan Brower appearing on set for most of the 2 days of shooting. Extras were able to stay on the set between shoots as long as they were quiet. Airplanes flying overhead and trains passing through town on the Union Pacific Railroad were not always as cooperative, however, and often were enough to prompt a cry of "Cut!" from director Clint Jordan. One of the most well-known and iconic projects in the Canby area was not actually a film, but a commercial. In 1986, advertisers for the Burger King fast food franchise came to the Canby area to shoot a television ad centered around, among other locales, the Gribble Barn, located on Highway 170, about 5 miles south of Canby. The project, led by Mark Kapos Films in Los Angeles and the McCann Erickson Advertising Agency based in New York, involved painting a massive 30-foot-tall logo for the fictional crop-dusting outfit, AA Flying Service, on the side of the century-old barn, which was owned by Eola Bowers. Another farm on Highway 170, owned by Lester and Myra Nelson, also featured prominently in the shoot. More than 25 film crew members descended on the area to execute the commercial, which was intended to promote the hamburger chain's Double Burger. Everything had to be done in pairs. Two trucks traveling down a highway, side by side, shirtless twin boys scampering around the Nelson farm armed with Double Burgers, a young couple walking down a country road with the giant AA Flying Service logo in the background. The couple was actually two of the Nelsons' kids, 38-year-old Phil Nelson and his kid sister Pat Root, who was 34 at the time. Frank DeSantis, a Portland graphic artist, designed the logo of the old weathered barn sign, and two other Portland sign painters, Ben Schoenman and Peter McKernan, spent more than 60 hours bringing the logo to life on the east-facing sidewall of the historic structure. DeSantis applied the oil-based paint in thin, dry layers to achieve the intended look. The scene lasted all of 6 seconds when it finally appeared on TV in November 1986, but the AA Flying Ace logo became an iconic symbol of Canby for many years until the Gribble Barn was sadly torn down in 2017. Another made-for-TV movie, Fatal Exposure, filmed scenes at a Canby area farm in 1990, and a national TV commercial for Dodge Automobiles was staged at the Canby Ferry in 1987. But the project that finally landed Canby on the Oregon Film Trail just last year was Echo Park's appearance in 2014 on the popular NBC fantasy police procedural series Grimm. Its season 3 episode, Synchronicity, which aired in April of that year, featured a number of locales from the park, which stood in for a European forest in the modern-day fairy tale adaptation. The Canby Economic Development Department assisted the production's crew to identify locations and provide access to other needed accommodations, like parking to store trailers, equipment, and crew facilities. A film crew of 80 and 8 actors spent 13 hours setting up and filming several scenes in the park's disc golf course and a field near the logging road trail. Other scenes from the episode were shot at the Aurora State Airport and a home and nursery in Malala. Producers said that they liked the Canby site because it had the look of pristine wilderness but was easy to access, accommodating the wide variety of equipment needed for a professional television production.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.
And now, a message from Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to take this moment to invite you personally to come and hang out with us for our end of season client event. It's a thank you to all the wonderful people we've done business with, as well as a welcome to a lot of our community. I'm doing this in partnership with Vanessa Zimmerman, Zimmerman team at Academy Mortgage. It's just kind of our way of saying thank you. We've really enjoyed getting to know you, doing business with you, etc. We'll be outside. We're sensitive to the fact that we're in COVID, still dealing with that. So it will be spread out. People will have room to breathe and sit and walk and talk. Reckless Company, if you've never heard them before, they're awesome. They're going to be playing. We'll have TMK here. I can't wait to try the corn dog. I've been waiting like 2 years to try this corn dog. So it looks amazing, and I've heard it's amazing, and I think there's quite a following. Also, they'll have all kinds of other food. We'll have beer and cider. Everything's hosted, of course, as a thank you. Again, it's for our clients. It's for our community. We really, really want to come and celebrate. We'll have swag for you, all kinds of fun things for the kids. We hope to see you on 9/16 from 4 to 8 in the afternoon.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait. Do you know any trivia that isn't, like, animal-related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest-running, locally-owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.